You know, I've been thinking this last few weeks, you know, always thinking about Easter. I think about it months in advance and been thinking about, you know, what I was going to talk about and so on. But this last couple of weeks, one of the thoughts that have come to me, I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but Time Magazine, Newsweek, U.S. News and World Report, you know, if they're magazines, and then just news blogs, always come out with all these interesting things about Jesus. You know, was he really buried? Was he, you know, was he married? I mean, all these various kinds of things. And one of the things that typically comes out around Easter is the whole idea that Easter was somehow hijacked by Christians, because it was, in reality, it was the celebration. It was a pagan holiday. And it was a pagan holiday where, you know, they worshipped about the turning of the seasons and so on. And then Christians go, well, no, let's not do that. Let's worship the resurrected Messiah. And actually, every Sunday is a celebration of the resurrected Messiah when the church came. From the very beginning, the church worshipped on Sunday. But what's interesting is, so for 2,000 years, the church has celebrated this thing called Easter, or nearly 2,000 years. But over the last, you know, let's just say the last half a century for sure, but maybe longer than that, it's like it's flipping again. Back to where now, it's not a religious holiday anymore. Yeah, people get time off, you know, the banks are all closed, all that kind of stuff. But it's become more and more secularized and more commercialized. You know, I saw a sign the other day that talked about that they were having an adult Easter egg hunt. Why don't you just get the candy, skip the hunt? But you know, so it's just become secularized, and so it's an interesting dynamic that's taking place. And the reality is, we have Easter off. We still have, you know, call it Easter. It's still a national holiday, or a holiday, and banks are closed again on Fridays or whatever, because Jesus rose from the dead. So no matter how secularized it gets, that's the reality behind it. You know what I've done is I've compiled. From the four biographies, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, I've compiled a quick timeline of the events around Easter. And I'm gonna walk through that, and in the middle of it, I'm gonna make a couple of points and then one point at the very end. So that's where we're headed. Let me pray. Father, thank you again for all that you've done in our lives, all that you want to do. And I pray, Jesus, that you would help me this morning. Amen. You know, when Easter, the events that happened around Easter happened on what was called the Jewish holiday called Passover. And the Jews, by declaration from God in the scriptures, were told to come to Jerusalem as often as they were for Passover. So thousands upon thousands of people would flood into Jerusalem and for this celebration. And there was no, you know, there was no room at the inn. Well, there was no room when it came to Passover time. So what people did was they just camped wherever they could. And so on the last night of Jesus, before when he's, you know, the night that he's arrested, he had the Last Supper, ate with the disciples, and then they sang a hymn, it says, and then they went out to the garden. Well, the garden, you may not have thought about this, but the garden that they went out to was actually their campsite. So they went back to where they had been camping, because again, there was just no place. And so they're out there camping, and you know, the disciples are all falling asleep. Jesus is over praying, and then comes this troop of Roman soldiers, Jewish religious leaders, and to arrest Jesus. And he's betrayed by a kiss. You probably know most of the stories. Betrayed by a kiss. You know, Peter grabs a sword and chops off Malchus's ear. Jesus reached down, heals the ear. And then they haul Jesus off back into Jerusalem for a trial. And while they're hauling him back to Jerusalem, two of the disciples, John, and we don't know the name of the other disciple, probably it wasn't one of the apostles, they followed at a distance so they could see, what are they doing with Jesus? Where are they taking Jesus? And so they take Jesus back into the city and it ends up being this sham trial. You know, in a matter of a few hours, they find him guilty of the Jews find him guilty of blasphemy. I'll talk about why the Romans executed him in a couple minutes. And the Romans were willing to execute him. So the next morning, they're going to execute Jesus. It's interesting, the next morning when everything's being, you know, happening, Jesus is hanging on the cross, and the only disciple or apostle that's there at the time is John. The women are there, and some other disciple men watching from a distance, but all of the other apostles, the 10 apostles, and a bunch of other disciples are hiding behind a locked door in Jerusalem in fear for their life. That's where they're at. And so Jesus dies 3 o'clock, two rich and well-known Jewish leaders, Nicodemus, and I got Nicodemus beforehand. Somebody help me here. Joseph of Arimathea. I did the same thing at the graveside. In Langley, at the dock. So Joseph and Nicodemus ask for the body. So they take the body from the cross, and they take him out to the graveyard where they're going to bury him in Joseph's, it's called borrowed tomb. So Joseph was this rich guy, had his own tomb. And while they're wrapping his body, putting spices on him, wrapping him, getting him ready to put him in the tomb, it says that the women were off a distance. They're watching. They knew exactly where Jesus had been buried. So that's all that's taking place. Sunset comes, Sabbath starts. And nothing happens from Friday dark until Saturday dark. When Saturday dark comes around, the women go into town or wherever they happen to go. They go and to find some more spices where they could continue the embalming and the preparation of Jesus' body. The interesting thing is Joseph of Arimathea, Nicodemus, and the women who got all of the spices and everything to re-embalm him, none of them believed that Jesus was going to come back to life. You know, we're going to talk about in just a minute about doubt. None of them believed Jesus. They were no more prone to believing Jesus would come back to life than you and I are as modern people who say dead people don't come back to life. So they go back out the next morning, sunrise. They take all their spices and whatever, and they go out to the tomb. And as they're walking out to the tomb, they ask the question, you know, they're talking among themselves, and they say, who's going to remove the tombstone? You know, this big, massive tombstone. Who's going to roll it in the groove? They you know, that's how they'd work. There's a groove. They rolled it. Who's going to move it? Who's going to move this stone? And as they approach the grave, the tomb, they realize that the tomb was open, and sitting next to it was, they said, a young man, what ended up being an angel. And that angel said to them these words, said, I know you're looking for Jesus. He's not here. He's risen from the dead. The tomb is empty. Now go tell the disciples the tomb is empty. And it says, a New Living Translation says, trembling and astonishment had seized them. Well, I bet so. The tomb's open. There's nobody there. This, what they eventually realize is an angel is talking to them. And Eugene Peterson puts it this way. It says, they got out as fast as they could. Beside themselves, their heads swimming, stunned, they said nothing to anyone as they ran to the hiding place. Because all of the apostles and a bunch of the disciples are in the hiding place. They're locked behind doors because they just, you know, they're afraid for their life. If that happened to Jesus, what in the world could happen to us? And so the women get there, and they tell them everything that's happened. And it says the apostles didn't believe a word of it. They thought they were all making it up. But just to make sure, Peter and John bolted out of the locked door. They ran back to the graveyard, to the tomb, and they found it exactly as the women said. The tomb was empty. You know, the grave cloths are there, but they found the tomb empty. And they went back. So they left. It doesn't give us any of the details, but they leave. They go back to the hiding place, but some of the women stay there. And that's when Jesus first appears alive from the dead to these women. And so again, they go back and tell the guys that still don't believe him. Later that day, two men left the hiding place. I'm calling it that. Whatever the locked room is they were behind. Two men left and started a journey back to this little, their hometown, about 7 miles away to what's called Emmaus, was this little town. And as they're walking, they're talking all about the events that have just happened in the last few days. You know, all the Jesus and, you know, the Simon of Cyrene carrying the cross. I mean, they're talking about all these events that are taking place. And this man comes walking along. And it actually says of these two disciples that they were, I'll use these, this is how the words go, they were afraid, sad, disappointed, and confused. So this man comes walking up to him, and he, you know, interacts with him, and eventually he says, you know, what were you talking about so animated about when I came upon you? And they said, it says they stopped in the middle of the road and looked at this man, and they said, are you the only one in Jerusalem that doesn't know what's happened these last few days? It's like, hello, don't you know what's just occurred, kind of thing? And it says of Jesus then, it says that, they don't know it's Jesus, but it says of Jesus, he says, what things? What things took place? So Jesus says this, or the men say this. They said the things about Jesus, the prophet, the miracle worker, they executed him on a cross. We had hoped he was the promised Messiah. Some women from our group went to the tomb and found it empty, and they said they had seen an angel who told them Jesus was alive. Some of the group ran to the tomb, but it was empty, just as the women had said. And they just continued to have this discussion. As they got closer, as they're on their trip, it says that Jesus, again, they don't know it's Jesus. This guy they're talking to begins telling them all about Jesus from the Old Testament, from Moses, from the prophets, from the book of Psalms, from the writings of Moses, telling them all about who this Jesus Messiah is. And so they get far enough down the road, and they eventually invite the guy to come into the house and eat with them. And while they're eating, Jesus takes the bread and he breaks it. And as he breaks the bread, it says their eyes were open and they realized that was Jesus that was traveling with them. They came like, wow, that was Jesus. And it says, and immediately Jesus disappeared and left. So they head back to Jerusalem. These two guys, they're so excited. They've just seen Jesus. They start heading back to Jerusalem. They run back to Jerusalem and they find the guys all behind locked doors. They find him in behind the locked doors. And they're telling him all about, and the group's now telling him about what had happened. They're telling the group about what's happened. And so they're all talking about it. And suddenly Jesus appears in the room. Now, we don't know if he walked through walls, he walked through the door, he just, boom, he appeared. We don't know. But Jesus appears in the room. And he talks to the men, and they're again, it says they were startled and frightened, thinking they were seeing a ghost. And he says he rebuked them for their stubborn unbelief, because they refused to believe. And then he said, why are you frightened and your hearts are filled with doubt? And then it says, so they would know he wasn't a ghost. He ate some fish, ate some bread, and ate some fish. Again, they were not expecting Jesus to rise from the dead. They were not expecting it at all. And he says, why are you frightened and your hearts filled with doubt? And you know why they're hearts were filled with doubt? Because dead people don't come back to life, especially after 3 days. I mean, they might on the table, you know, you shock them. Some in the room have been shocked back to life. You know, they're dead on the table, but they get shocked and come back to life. But not after 3 days. It just doesn't happen. That's why they were frightened. What in the world is taking place? And, you know, you might have doubts about the resurrection from the dead, and you're in good company. You're in good company because the disciples didn't believe it. The women didn't believe it because it just doesn't happen. It's interesting. Jesus uses these two lines. He says this, why are your hearts filled with doubt? And then it says he rebuked them for their stubborn unbelief. They refused to believe. You know, there's a difference between doubt, this thing called doubt. There's a difference between doubt and stubborn unbelief. You know, doubt is the whole idea that, like, man, I'd really like to believe. I don't know. I got questions. I can't sort all this out. I can't kind of, you know, wrap my arms around all that's happening. It's this wrestle with, is this true? Could it be true? I don't know if it's true. I hope it's true. I'd really like it to be true, but I'm just not certain. And so it's this wrestle about, you know, all these things. And you know, sometimes someone that's in doubt has this idea that, you know what? This is just, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Now, the reality behind doubt is that Jesus can work with doubt. If Jesus couldn't work with doubt, Jesus wouldn't have worked in your life. Because who of us in this room, honestly, have not had times of doubt? Where you just, how could this be? How possibly could this all work this way? So that's the idea of doubt. And Jesus can work with doubt. He can take a person that's in the middle of doubt and trying to figure it out and go, I don't know. I talked to someone this week and I said to him, I don't know where you're at in your faith journey. We were talking about life. And I said, I don't know where you're at in your faith journey. And the person just looked at me right in the eyes and said, well, I'm a work in progress. And I thought, that describes every one of us, a work in progress. Alistair McGrath says this. He says, and it'll be up on your screen, but he says, doubt is wistful longing to be sure of the things in which we trust. It's just this desire to have it all figured out, but wrestling with, could it all be true? That's doubt, and Jesus can work with it. Now, the difference of unbelief is, or stubborn unbelief, it's the arms crossed, fist, squeezed, jaw tight, that says, I do not believe, I will not believe, you can't make me believe, so stop trying. Stubborn unbelief is a defiance. It's a defiance. It's where somebody just plants their feet and goes, I don't care what evidence there might be. I don't care what things God's done in my family's life or my friend's life, whatever happens to me. My feet are set, and you cannot drag me to believing if you wanted to. I will not believe. And the problem with, defiant unbelief is God can't work with it. God's actually got to take the person who's defiant in unbelief, and he's got to work in their life to the place where their heart is softened and is moving towards doubt before he can really do in their life what he wants to do. I mean, that's what happens, is God takes someone, even someone who's just defiant, I will not believe, you cannot make me believe. God, if God's going to get a hold of them, he's got to work their heart to the place where they begin to doubt. And at that point, they're not doubting the truth. They're doubting their doubts. That's what they're doing. They begin to doubt their doubts. Well, but what? And they start having buts, not about all about on this side. They start having buts about on this side. Everybody with me? And it's that stubbornness that God can't deal with. And unbelief is this closed heart to God. Sometime during that day, Thomas, the one disciple that wasn't with the group when Jesus appeared to them, he came back to the hiding place. And while he's there, the disciples start telling him all about what's happened, all that's happened to the women, all that happened to the men on the road to Emmaus, all the people that, the people that Jesus appeared to and the group, and he's telling all about the angel and so on. And Thomas says, I won't believe unless I see, is what Thomas says. He says, I won't believe unless I see. And the nail wounds and where they nailed Jesus to the cross. And it says a week later, so now for a whole week, nothing happens. And it says a week later, Jesus, they're all together, Thomas is with them, and it says suddenly Jesus appeared to them again. Now in my warped mind, okay, I imagine when Jesus appears that time, they're all like, I scare my wife sometimes. I'll walk around the corner and she's doing something, she just jumps and kind of thing. That's what I'm imagining. And I'm imagining someone like Peter says, Jesus, stop doing that. This is multiple times he's just appeared, just out of and they're all shocked and startled by the whole thing. And, and Jesus again talks to them about what's going on. And it's John says they were afraid, they were filled with anxiety. And that they were wrestling with doubt. If you follow any news clippings or news, a news junkie. I'm a news junkie. I don't get other than the Whidbey Record real newspapers. I just get it all online. But I'm a news junkie. And if you read any of the news, one of the things that's regularly talked about is how afraid people are, and how much anxiety people have, and how much stress people are under. They talk about it with middle schoolers, they talk about it with high schoolers, they talk about it with college-age students, they talk about it with adults in the middle of life, and they talk about it with those at the end of life, or senior citizens, and they talk about how everybody's stressed, everybody's full of anxiety, everybody's full of worry, and they people are claiming that it's the number one mental health issue in America, is that people are under stress and strain and anxiety. Here's the reality. If Jesus can suddenly appear in these guys' locked room to deal with their anxiety and speak peace to them, Jesus can walk into the room of your life and speak peace to your anxiety, your worries, your fears, and your doubts. That's the reality. If he could do it, clear back then. And many of us in this room have experienced Jesus walk right into the locked door of our life and do some powerful work inside of us. I met with Norma Metcalf, and many of you will know that name. Norma's the wife of our former congressman, one of our former congressmen from South Whidbey. And I met with Norma this week, and I just talking to her about life and asking questions about trying to get part of the picture of her life. And so I said to Norma, I said, Norma, how did your faith, when I first started asking her questions, I said, Norma, I've known you for 35 years. You've been part of our church for 30 plus years. And I said, I don't even know how you and Jack met. I didn't even know those details of her life. And I said, but, you know, and then as we got talking, I said, Norma, tell me how your faith journey began. You know, did you grow up in a church home? I just didn't know any of these things about her. I said, you grew up in a church home. You know, did you have a neighbor? Did you have a grandma praying for you? She said, I really don't know anyone who was praying for me. And one of the daughters was sitting there, and she said, well, maybe it was Donna, this woman that they interacted about for a minute. Maybe it was Donna that was praying. But she said, I really don't know anybody that was praying for me and anybody who was talking to me about it. I just don't know. And I said, so, well, then what happened? And she said, you know, one night I just knelt down beside my bed and said, Jesus, I give my life to you. And it's that. And I said, but Norma, that's not normal. That's not what people do just out of the blue, just kneel beside their bed and say, I give you my life. I surrender to you. And she said, I said to Jesus, I will give you anything and everything. And she said, I immediately heard these words in my mind. What about your daughter's college education? Because that was just this vital thing in her life, she said, that she wanted all of her daughters to go through college education. So all of a sudden, now there's this wrestle. Would you give up your daughters not going to college to follow me? And she said, I said, I'll give you even my daughter's college education. And it began this journey. You know where Norma's journey began? It began with surrender. That's where it began. She just surrendered. When God said, but what about this? What about your daughter's college education? You know, with the four daughters. And she said, yes. And it started this faith, long faith journey in her life of walking with Jesus. And because that's really where it all begins. Everything following Jesus begins with surrender, it happens through surrender, and it ultimately ends with surrender. It's all about surrender. You know, actually, that you know, you came in today, and some of you, I don't know what your church background's from, or no church background, or whatever it happens to be, but you saw some people have their hands raised. Do you realize that hands being raised is the universal sign of surrender? No matter where it's at around the world, when someone is getting ready to get attacked, if they're not running, they got their hands in the air, or they're running with their hands in the air. Because it's this universal sign of surrender. It all starts with surrender. It all starts with surrender. It happens by surrender. And ends with surrender. So, Jesus appears to Thomas, and he says to Thomas, he says, come, put your hands in the holes, you know, your fingers in the holes in my hand. And then Thomas does that, and Thomas says, my Lord and my God. That's what he says. He proclaims, my Lord and my God. It's like, okay, I surrender. I give. I give to you right now. I surrender it all. And Jesus says to him, says, you know, these words, let me make sure I get them exactly right. He says, you believe, because it'll be up on the screen. He says, you believe because you've seen, but blessed are those who believe without seeing. He said, blessed are you because you believe, because you've seen, you've touched, you've seen this all. But blessed are those who don't see. You know, in ancient times, people used to seal documents, like, you know, take a scroll of papyrus and wrap it all up. And if it was an important document, they wanted to send it to someone, they would put a drop of wax where the two pieces of paper came together. And then they would use a thing called a signet ring. So it was a ring, you know, it's like a class ring, but it's a signet ring that had, there's an example of it up there, where it has its own unique sign, symbol into it, or its own unique sign. And that sign would be pressed into the wax, and it left an impression in the wax. And as it left that impression in the wax, and then it was, you know, held the thing together. And if someone tampered with it, you know, broke it, the seal would come apart, and they would know that it had been tampered with. So it was kind of a safety, you know, a security envelope kind of thing as we think about today. But there were two parts to the signet ring. There's the ring, And there's the impression that the ring makes. Now, Jesus said to Simon, he said, you have seen me and you believe. You've seen the signet. That's what he saw. He saw the signet is what he saw. But he said, blessed are those who don't see the signet, but they see the impression and believe. You know, I was with Charlene Baldwin this week, shortly before she passed away, but I spent time over days with her. And so I was at Norma's house. This is before she passed away. And I was at Norma's house, and I said, you know, I was telling her about Charlene because she asked about how Charlene was doing. And I said, and Norma said, you know, the interesting thing is, when we first moved to the island, she said, I went to the laundromat in Clinton. Now, I didn't even know there had been a laundromat in Clinton. I see some people like Sandy, I see you shaking your head like, oh yeah, there was a laundromat in Clinton. I don't remember there being a laundromat in Clinton. But she said, I went there and I looked across the laundromat and here was this woman and she looked right at me and she just had this gleam in her eye and she said, I knew she was one of us. And it was Charlene Baldwin. That's who it was. See, Norma didn't see the symbol, or the signet, but she saw the impression in Charlene's heart. She saw the impression. Now, if you're a follower of Jesus already, if you've surrendered at some point, a follower of Jesus, the six people that got baptized today, the question becomes, for them, for all of us, the question becomes, do people see the impression of Jesus marked in the wax of our life? Because blessed are those who see, but most people don't see the signet. But blessed are those who believe, even though they've only seen the impression. That makes sense? So that's the question. That's the question. And then Jesus ends up with these words. He says to Peter, to Thomas, he says this. He says, so don't be faithless any longer, but believe. Don't be faithless any longer, but believe. Don't be faithless any longer, but believe. My challenge to those of you in this room that wrestle with doubt is just surrender that doubt. Just grab a hold of it and realize that it's part of the faith journey to have questions. Those of you that your hearts are like, have somehow settled and said, I will not believe no matter what. Or you've said, I will not believe because I've seen a bad impression. You know, those people call themselves impression, but what I see don't look anything like Jesus. And then our hearts get hurt. You know, we have disappointments with people. Surrender all of that. Surrender all of that. Because Jesus can work with doubt. He can work with doubt. He can work with doubt. And I want to encourage you to surrender control. You know the interesting thing about control? Is we think we're in control of life. Right? I mean, we do. We just think we're in control of life. And the reality is too often we're out of control. We're out of control. I mean, we say to ourselves, why did I do that? You did that because you didn't have control. That's why we ask that question. Like, why did I just say that? I should have never said that. Because I couldn't control that little thing between my teeth. Control is an illusion. It's an illusion. So my encouragement would be surrender. 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 I'm going to lead in a prayer. And we're just going to close our eyes, bow our heads, close our eyes. And quietly, if you need to surrender, you pray this prayer to Jesus. Doubts, surrender. No, I got more like stubborn unbelief than I got doubts. Surrender. Surrender. It'll go something like this. Jesus, you just repeat this quietly between you and the Lord. Jesus, thank you that you love me. I surrender my past to you and ask for your forgiveness. I surrender my life to you to follow you. Teach me how to live for you every day from now on. Amen. If you prayed that prayer first time, or it's been years since you did something like that, would you just slip your hand up so I can see who you are, and I'm going to pray for you. You don't have to be embarrassed about it. After you've raised it, you can put it down. But I just want to know, so I'm praying for you, that the Lord would help you figure out what this looks like to walk with you. Lord, you see those that raise their hand. You see those that are squeamish about raising their hand and making it known to someone. Lord, grab them at their words that they spoke from their mouth and begin this wonderful journey, taking them on with you, the resurrected Messiah. All the ups, all the downs, all the ins, all the outs, all the things they're going to go through. Lord, as they prayed that prayer, maybe even out of desperation, prayed that prayer. Meet them, Jesus. Meet them, Jesus. The rest of us that are already said yes to you, Lord, help us as we continue to do your transforming life in our work, your transforming work in our lives, that people could see the impression of Jesus in us. That people would be able to see the impression of Jesus. Thank you again for your wonderful love and grace. Amen. Amen. Again, thanks for joining us today. The worship team's going to lead us in a song, and then they'll dismiss you. So.